Gateway Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
This is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. Quite sure how to introduce my next guest, a very special guy. His name is YG Nightstorm, and I've gotten to know him over the last few months, but I've only gotten to know him personally face-to-face in the last few weeks when we were matched together in a charity event raising money for regional Catholic schools in the Atlanta area. And I was so taken with him and his story and his apostolate that I've asked him to come on the show. YG, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you. I liked how you did that, Dr. Deal. That was so cool. Thank you for having me, sir.
It's kind of like my putting stroke. Now, YG, I really have thought of this show with you under the title that you actually use, The Power of Forgiveness, because when I look at your life story and all the things that you have endured, even as a young boy, it's just so remarkable that you have become the man you have. And I'll just tell my listeners, this man is filled with joy, with good humor, with laughter, with just enough seriousness that it doesn't get too out of control. But, you know, you are many things. You're a pro-life activist. You are a speaker, and you speak a great deal about overcoming all kinds of problems in life, which we all have, including raising of children, suffering, financial setback. And I think the best way to let our listeners know where exactly we're coming from and where we're going to go during this interview is for you to begin with what happened to you, the sad story of what happened to you when you were 11 years old at a Catholic camp. What happened?
Well, basically what happened, I grew up in a very abusive household. Mom hated Dad and Dad hated Mom, in between them loving each other. And my father used to be very, very physically abusive towards my mother. And when their relationship started to run its course, where it got too dangerous for them both, my father left. But the thing is, as a child, once I started looking exactly like my father, my mother could not take the fact that I looked just like the man who was abusing her. So she had no power to fend herself against him. But she took all of that aggressiveness and aggression and took it out on me. And one day she got so sick of looking at my father's face on my body, she said, I just need to send you to camp. I need a break. I just need a break. I can't stand him. You look just like your dad. I need a break. So I'm sending you to camp. So I went to camp. This is the year 1985, and I was 11 years old. And I was kind of an outcast because of all the abuse I went through. I was very, very quiet from the other kids. And a Catholic minister, he noticed I was quiet, and he came to me and he talked to me. I told him my whole life story, doctor, and he understood where I came from. And he took me under his wing. He got me to trust him, and he taught me how to canoe. He taught me how to build fires. He taught me how to survive in the wilderness, and he empowered me. And on the last day of camp, he did something that I did not see coming. He He told me he was proud of me for getting through the things that I've gotten through and being brave during those 2 weeks of camp. But he closed the door in the cabin, and he raped me. And I could not understand that this was a person who was like a father figure to me, someone that I trusted. And he further took it further and said, if you ever told anybody, because God is everywhere, that if you told anybody this happens to you, he would dispatch his angels anywhere you are in the world and kill you and your mom in your sleep. So you have to keep this quiet. So just like God has given you to me, he gave me to a priest in 1963. So at 11 years old, I was afraid for my life to tell anyone, but I was brave enough. Once I got home, I called my father, who lived in Birmingham at the time, sir, and I said, I got raped, and I can't talk to mom because she doesn't want to talk to me because I look like you, but can you please come help me? So my father said, I'll be there in 2 hours because we live in Atlanta, and I sat and waited for him, and 2 hours turned into 2 days, 2 days turned into 2 weeks, 2 weeks turned into 2 months, 2 months turned into too much time. I didn't care anymore. I knew I was abandoned, and I felt that my life was in danger, and my life was destroyed because the priest was right. My father never showed up to help me, so I need to be quiet so God doesn't dispatch his angels to kill me and my mom. So that's how my whole relationship with Christ, well, with the church started.
So this rape was never reported to the church?
No, sir, because at the time I wasn't even Catholic. My mother was Protestant, but she sent me to a camp that just so happened to have Catholic ministers there, and I didn't tell anyone because I was afraid once Dad did not show up.
Now, was this a priest or a lay person?
This was a lay person who was a minister, a Catholic minister, and he told me that the same way that I belonged to him, he belonged to a priest in 1963, because a priest had raped him.
So he had been raped himself.
Yes, sir.
Sadly, that's often the story when you look at these, you know, kind of stories. They tend to be generational. So you were 11 years old, someone who had helped you, been kind to you, like you said, empowered you, suddenly turned, committed a very outrageous act of violence, and then threatened you with it on top of that. How did you feel as you went home that day? What did that experience do to you?
I felt like my soul had died, honestly. I felt destroyed. I was afraid. And the one thing is, I couldn't tell mom because it's hard to tell one abuser that somebody is abusing you or abused you. So I felt trapped, and I felt like my father was the only answer. And when he did not show up, I honestly believed at 11 years old, the curse of that layperson, of that minister, was true, that God had abandoned me and that my life would be a cursed life. And unfortunately, I went through a number of other traumatic issues where that goes. Sentiments rang true for a certain extent, sir.
So you actually started acting out what you thought your life was going to be?
Yes, sir. It had gotten so deep into my core, into the very essence of me, where I felt God does not care about me, so why should I care about anything? And I'm 11 years old, and that transitioned as I got older into my teenage years. And I started having a lot of negative, extremely negative things happening to me, and I thought I was honestly living under a curse.
And I'm also assuming you were doing some negative things to other people as well.
Yes, sir. I was acting out. I became extremely violent. I walked around with a chip on my shoulder, and anyone that ever looked at me sideways, you know, I started going in on them.
Let me tell our listeners that YG Nightstorm's arm is about as big as my thigh. I wouldn't want him to act out on me, I can tell you right now, but I can also tell my listeners that this is one of the gentlest men now that you'll ever meet. This delightful person, and I mean, anybody that allows me to yell at him for 18 holes about how to swing a golf club has got to be a pretty nice guy. So you go into your teenage years. You have no relationship with your father, really. Are you still living with your mother at this point?
Yes, I'm still living with Mom, and every now and then she would get into her rants of, you look just like him, or she'll call me by my father's name, and I'm like, Mom, it's me. And
right.
Now, don't get me wrong. My mother loves me, and, you know, she still loves me.
What's her name?
I couldn't tell you her name.
Okay.
I'm not going to share that.
That's fine. I got it.
She loves me. But her way of responding to her anger got so out of control that I had to leave her as a teenager, like right after I graduated from high school. And I was actually sleeping on the streets of Atlanta because I felt being homeless was safer than being at home with my mom, honestly.
How long were you homeless, YG?
I was on the streets for about 6 months, and it was some very, very tough times. It even got so bad to the point where I was robbed by other homeless people. They took my socks and my shoes, and I got beat up really, really, really bad. And even got urinated on by some folks because they're like, look at the homeless kid, and, you know. And I was sleeping on the street. I was so tired after getting beat up and robbed that some kids urinated on me. And at that point, I knew I was just ready to die. I knew God. I just felt that God didn't want me, and all I thought about was the curse of whom I called the wicked man who raped me.
Well, yes, at what point did this begin to turn around for you?
Well, the seed was planted, while I was sleeping on the streets, and it was cold. It was February.
In February in Atlanta, I know. That's really cold.
Yeah, and this was like in the early 90s, okay? And I had just got through being robbed, and I was sleeping on the streets, and I said, God, I just want to freeze to death. And I had given up. And lo and behold, I hear the rumblings of this old engine. And I open my eyes, and I kid you not, doctor, it is a vintage Rolls Royce. And I'm like, what in the world is a Rolls Royce doing parked next to me? And a gentleman, he got out of the car, and he was in his 70s, an older gentleman, white guy. And he just walked up to me, and he looked down at me, and he said, young man, are you cold? And I'm like, duh, yes, old white guy.
This is sounding like a biblical parable, but go ahead.
Okay, and I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, why is this old rich white guy looking down on me? Here we go again. I've already gotten urinated on. I've already got beaten up. I've already got robbed. What's going to happen now? So while I was complaining to him, he noticed that I did not have any socks on my feet. So while I'm still talking crap to him, he takes off his shoes, and he has on a pair of very thick Argyle socks. He takes his Argyle socks off, and he starts to put them on my feet.
While
I'm still cussing him out, and he
puts
them on my feet, and he holds my feet, and he begins to pray for me. And he says, young man, I want you to know that as I put these socks on your feet, Christ will cover you. You will be okay. And I said, how do you know that? He said, because 40 years ago, I was homeless, and I was sleeping on the streets with no socks, no shoes, and an older black man in his car got out of his car and put his Argyle socks on my feet. And he told me all those years back, that it's going to be all right. God is going to cover you. So now I'm passing on this blessing to you, and one day you will do it for someone else. And at 19 years old, Dr. Hudson, honestly, I didn't get it. But through retrospect, I see that the seed was planted. And
so you had some suspicion. I mean, your attitude at that point was you couldn't really believe anybody.
Yeah. I had no trust for anyone at all. And only thing I thought in my mind, because the Rodney King riots had happened like the year before, and there was all this racial stuff going on in the country. And I'm like, oh, Lord, now I'm on the street, and this old rich white guy is coming to me. He's probably going to say I tried to rob him or something.
So okay. I lived 15 years in Atlanta. Do you remember what street you were on?
Yeah, I was on Peachtree Street. I was on Peachtree Street. Oh. I was right behind Five Point Station.
Yes, I know it very well.
So and
he puts the socks on.
He just put socks on. Yeah.
And what happens then?
Well, what happens then is my feet got warm first. and he prays for me some more, and he says, just keep on fighting, and you're going to be all right. And it took me another few weeks. I got a job. I was working just any job, sweeping fast food restaurants for food and a little bit of money, and I ended up working my way off the streets. But, you know, and I started to think about that day. It, like I said, it still really didn't hit me because I still had some more things that was going to happen to me in the near future that was going to test my faith again. But the beautiful thing about this, Doc, every time my faith was being tested in a traumatic way, God was planting those seeds. I couldn't see it. But just because I did not see them did not mean I wasn't benefiting from his grace.
In the midst of all that, so where did your next helping hand come from, if I could call it that?
Well, I would tell you my next helping hand came, it was a few years later, four more years later in 1999, and I was dealing with my next traumatic event. I had gotten a young lady pregnant, and she was pregnant with twins, and I thought I was going to have a family. I had recently gotten divorced from my first wife, and that relationship was terrible because of me and my responsiveness on hating the world and not trusting anyone. So
right.
I started dating another young lady, and I was having these twins, and I'm thinking everything is going to be fine. And we got into this stupid argument that most young people do. I don't even remember what we was arguing about. But she said, YG, I'm going to hurt you in the worst way that you've ever been hurt, and you're going to always remember for the rest of your life. And I said, baby, I done been homeless. I done been urinated on. I done been raped as a kid. There's nothing you can do. Just leave me alone. I'll pick you up on Monday to take you to the doctor so you can get you and babies looked at. So anyway, I called her on Monday. She didn't answer the phone. I called her on Tuesday. She didn't answer the phone. I called her for an entire week. She didn't answer the phone. And on that Sunday, she picked up the phone. And I said, how are you and the kids doing? And she said, well, YG, you don't have kids anymore. And I said, what happened? And she said, well, YG, I aborted your kids because I told you I'm going to hurt you more than you've ever been hurt before. And I asked her, why did you do that? She said, because I wanted to prove to you that I could. And once I was dealing with the abortion of my twins, I went to a church. And I hadn't gone to church in a while. And I was crying in the pews. And a minister came up to me, and he started praying for me. And I just started telling him everything that was going on with my life.
Were you by yourself in the church at the time?
Yes, sir. I was completely by myself because, now, see, this is on the Protestant side, okay? And people on the Protestant side, most folks don't go into a church on a Tuesday, okay?
Right.
The church was completely empty. And I was just there, and I was praying for answers, and I didn't quite get the answers that I wanted yet. And I repeat that word, yet, but another seed was planted that I would later discover what it was later on. But, yeah, a lot of stuff going on so far.
So the pastor prays with you. What happens then?
Well, what happens then is that a few months later, I meet my queen, whom I'm married to now. I meet the love of my life, Toby. And when he was praying for me, he said, I understand your pain and your hurt, but God is going to bless you with the woman that you need in your life, who will never hurt you in that way, but she will enhance your life. And all of the stuff that you have gone through, she will be there to help anchor you in your faith and support you through the darkness. And you know something? He was right. because my queen is all of that and then some. See, all of that in a bag of chips, dog.
Now, y'all have 7 children now.
Yes, sir.
And you've been married almost 17 years.
Yes, sir.
And you married her 17 years ago. How old are you now, YG?
I am 42 years young, sir.
You sure are young. and so you've got about 5 minutes left in this segment of the program. Mm-hmm. Was this the beginning of the real turnaround of your life, marrying your queen?
Yes, it was. And any man out there that has married up, and they understand, because it's very, very hard to find, as a man, a woman who is a prayerful woman, a woman who has your back whether you have money or not, a woman who honestly just wants to build you from the ground up, physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. That right there is a blessing and the very definition of Proverbs 31 and a queen. And I even didn't really appreciate her in the beginning, but I tell you this, she made me a believer, Doc.
I'm getting chills by the way you're describing what she did for you, because I think a lot of marriages, both the men and the women, don't understand they're there to build each other up the way you describe. You know that, mm-hmm. that it's a process like that.
Yes, sir.
But you also had another incident where you lost all your money in a business venture. When did that happen?
That happened in 2014, actually.
Well, that was late. Well, let's talk about that after, you know, after the next break. So in the first few years of being married to your queen, did you have a job? Did you start a new career? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I worked part-time here and part-time there, but I really wanted to start my ministry and talking to people and helping them deal with adversity. And I started my speaking career all those years ago. And times were extremely, extremely tough, extremely lean.
What was your message? What was your main message?
My main message at the time was God will help you with your ugly stuff. And ugly stuff can come in many, many forms. And my thing was with the rape and with being homeless. And my main message was God got me from being homeless. No, I'm not rich, but I'm just a guy trying to make it. But I'm making it every single day through the grace of God, through God's grace.
And now, at the time, you are, is it accurate to say an evangelical Protestant?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But you are, I understand, on the verge of entering the Catholic Church. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. I'm coming home, and that's a good story, too.
Well, we've got time, but I just want our listeners to know kind of where we're going with this. Now, I take it at the time, your queen, your wife, she started getting you to church regularly.
Yeah, we were both still searching for a church home, but she was grounded more in faith than I was. And she was like, sometimes, sweetheart, we don't have control on anything that's going on with us. So the best thing we can do is depend on God, because we can't depend on man. We can't depend on our friends. People let us down. Lord knows we done lived life enough to be let down and to suffer. But the only constant that's been in our life has been God. So we need to focus on making him a constant of our life and not all the stuff that gets in the way.
When did your first child come?
Well, we were considered the a black Brady Bunch, because I had 3 children from my first marriage, and she had 3 children from a prior marriage. And then once we got married, we had a beautiful baby girl together who's number 7 that links everybody. But I had my first child back in 1994.
And did all these kids get along?
Yes, sir. There's no such things as step in our family. everybody's blood. Everybody.
Who's? I just have a. I have a wild question. Who's the disciplinarian in your house?
I'm the disciplinarian.
Why did I think she would be?
Well, she. I tell you that she. If Mama ain't happy, the house ain't happy. And if my children grew up knowing if you upset Mom, you got a 300-pound dad that's coming after you. So
right.
I don't want my queen upset. I don't want her angry at anything. You guys better do what she says do, and this house better be together the way she says it, or you have to deal with me. And that kind of dynamic has honestly worked. Keep the queen happy, the house stay happy. I'm just saying, your kingdom grows when you got a healthy and happy queen. That's all I got to say.
YG, we're about to take a break, but I want our listeners to know on the other side of this short break, we're going to talk about the process by which you actually forgave this Catholic counselor at this Catholic camp who raped you, about the growth of your apostolate, and I would call it an apostolate of forgiveness and overcoming, and your relationship with Dr. Alveda King, who actually from whom I first heard your name, and your upcoming entry into the Catholic Church right after this break. Please stay with us.
The irresistible story of Tom Sawyer is being retold in a presentation by the Explorers Theater Troupe. This heartwarming adaptation follows Tom's adventures and never-ending mischief. Performances are June 3rd at 7 p.m. and June 4th at 2 and 7 at the Riverside Arts Center in Ypsilanti. This family-friendly show celebrates the joys of family, love, and friendship. Tickets start as low as $8 and a maximum of $35 per family. A special performance on June 2nd at 10 a.m. for just $3. Tom Sawyer at the Riverside Arts Center, June 2nd through the 4th.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Jesus said, "Where two or more are gathered in my name, there am I in their midst." Is Christ in the midst of your marriage? Many people say that prayer is too private to be shared with even their spouse. But how can two people who share their bodies think that there could be something wrong with sharing their spirits? Commit to praying with your spouse today. Start by thanking God for the little blessings of the day. Then ask his help with the struggles you and your mate haven't been able to sort out on your own. And don't forget to intercede for the other people in your life who need your prayers as well. When you speak your hearts out loud to God, together, you'll be amazed what God can teach you both about his plan for living your life and for loving each other. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The new Ave Maria radio app is available now for all your smart devices. Live streaming and audio on demand is included, but there's new features including video of free-range Q&A and the entire text of the RSVCE Bible. The app is free and easy to get, but when you download the Truth and Life Audio New Testament featuring the voices of many Hollywood stars, you'll be supporting Ave Maria Radio. It's the new and free Ave Maria radio app. Search at your app store or go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the app banner.
I am back with YG Nightstorm, whose story of being abused at a Catholic camp at age 11, of difficulty with his family, particularly his father leaving the home, difficult relationship with his mother because he reminded her of the dad, then becoming homeless and receiving help from an unknown wealthy white man, got out of a Rolls Royce and put socks on his feet, then a difficult first marriage, a girlfriend who aborted twins without him knowing it, but eventually meeting his queen, Toby, and they became immediately a family of six with three children from each former marriage, and now they have a baby of their own. I want to know, how did you ever, YG, come to be able to forgive this man who raped you? And was this just something you did spiritually, or did you actually find the person and let them know?
Well, I didn't know who he was, and it's been so many years that I couldn't pick him out of a lineup. But in 2008, a significant event happened to me to draw me to that. Our oldest son, Victor, he was working at Hartsfield International Jackson Airport on a job, and we got the phone call at 1 o'clock a.m. that Victor was killed accidentally on his job. And after we ran down to the hospital, me and my wife, all of our children, we ran down to the hospital, and I saw my son, and he was gone. And I saw Toby crying, and I saw my six other children crying, and I was sitting back there with his body in a room by myself. I started to pray. I said, God, I have had so much taken from me. I've suffered so much loss, but this hurts me more than anything. How in the world do you expect me to move forward? I couldn't protect myself as a kid being raped, and I can't even protect my son on his job. Now he's gone. What do you want from me? And I sat there in that room, Dr. Hudson. And as I walked out of that room, and the doctors put the sheet over his face, and I went to console Toby and my children, and we started trying to work through this agony together. Within about a year, I prayed again. And I wasn't preaching. I wasn't doing anything, because I just completely hated everything about God and the church. And a young man walked up to me, and he was telling me how his brother was killed in a drive-by. And he said, how can God do this? What's going on? And I just started talking to him, and I started ministering to him. And I didn't even know why I was ministering to him. And I said, sometimes things happen that's out of our control, but God empowers us in different ways to affect the lives of others through our adversities and our traumas. I said, my son was killed a year ago, but now me and my wife have gotten our six children together, and we are going to move forward. And that's when I decided I wanted to create a charity in his name to help other people. And while I was building that charity, it just came to me. I said, God, how can I talk to people authentically and help them get through their darkness if I'm still carrying around my own? And I heard the words, you must forgive.
And you heard the word.
I heard the words clear as day in my mind, you must forgive. And I could not understand that in the beginning. I did not want to do that in the beginning. But the more I prayed, and I'm just being completely transparent here, I didn't want to do it. But the more I prayed and the more I started letting this stuff go on the young lady who aborted my twins and the people who robbed me and urinated on me while I was homeless, even to the Catholic minister who raped me, as soon as I started to let it go and give it to God and invite the Holy Spirit into my life truthfully, through forgiveness, is when I felt empowered, honestly. Because carrying around that darkness, and you know this, carrying around that darkness will eventually kill you. It will destroy you. It will have you making very, very bad choices for your family because you're corrupted. It's corruption in your soul. But once you free it and you release it and you allow the Holy Spirit and the power of Christ to come into your life, this ain't just some church session I'm talking about. This is real, tangible stuff. Once you let Christ in and you let it go, then your focus becomes clearer and you're able to move forward in your life.
YG, what do you say to people who say to you, no, my anger toward this person is righteous anger, what was done to me was wrong, it was unjust, I have a right to be angry and to feel judgment toward this person? How do you respond?
Well, forgiveness is not about letting somebody off the hook. That's not what I'm saying. Forgiveness is used to free yourself of that person's power over you. That does not mean that if someone who has hurt you should be let off the hook, you shouldn't be prosecuted, all of that. Let the law do what the law does. But forgiveness, honestly, is used to not free that person from their responsibilities or their judgments, but it is to free yourself of that bondage of the power that they have over your life. That is what I preach to people. It's not about letting stuff go and forgive and forget and this person can now live their life and everything's fine. No. Use that forgiveness to free yourself of that jail cell that they have you in so you can move forward in your life and not allow that person or people that have hurt you continue to destroy you from within.
And that's why you felt, as you say, empowered by being able to forgive, because it opened up places inside of you that were, I guess, locked shut.
Yes, sir. I was full of hatred, anger, and I was making decisions in hatred and anger. I had a short fuse. I had a short fuse with my wife. I had a short fuse with my children, and it was literally destroying everything I cared about. And I said, I have to let this evil, this darkness go, because that person who raped me, those people who urinated on me, those people who have harmed me, they are not worth my life and they are not worth my happiness. But I am allowing them to continue to destroy me, even though that rape was 30 years ago. That man is still in my life and he has to go.
It occurs to me, YG, to say on behalf of myself and all our listeners that I believe nearly everyone, if not everyone, has the need to do this. There have been things that happened in my life that I've done or been done to me or, you know, collaborated. There are things that are out of control in everyone's life that happens. And regardless of your social status, black or white, wherever you are, these things happen to everybody because life has a tragic dimension. And this darkness you're talking about is something that I believe everybody struggles with, but I think at the same time they struggle to cover up that struggle.
Yes, they do.
Because they feel like it's a sign of weakness or something to show that.
Yeah, and one thing about our society, they do that, and I had an issue with that at one point in time. And the thing that fixed that with me, and this is crazy, Doc. I was actually invited to speak to rape survivors at a rape crisis center, and this is a secretive center that. That they don't give the location out, and they definitely did not allow men to be there. But the ladies that worked there knew me, they knew of my work, and they called me and they said, we want you to talk to these rape victims. And I said, are you sure about that? They said, yeah. And so I walked in, and it's 15 ladies. They were sitting in a circle. And as soon as they saw me, they were like, what are you doing here? You know,
yeah.
Raped by a man, what are you doing here? So I got a chair, and I sat in the circle. And I listened for 15 minutes to them telling me why I shouldn't be there. And when I told them at 11 years old in 1985, I was raped and I understand what you're dealing with. And they were like, well, how did this happen? You're 6'1", you're 320 pounds. Nobody could do this to you. I said, because it happened when I was 11. And I don't care how big I am. I don't care how strong I am. I'm human and I'm not going to be ashamed to tell my story anymore. It's not a sign of weakness for you to let this stuff go and help other people. It's actually a sign of strength because you're empowering yourself and you're empowering other people to do the same thing, to let it go, move forward, share your testimony with others so you can help free them from their personal hell. I think that's what we all do. There's no shame in my game or your game when you're doing the right thing to move forward in your life and to help others. There's no shame in that.
You know, you have...
And I dare somebody to tell me I'm weak on talking.
Well, I, even though you can't hit a golf ball, you're strong.
You
miss it about as strong as anybody I've ever seen.
Oh, my God.
We're going to work on that. But you have a lot of resources that you've made publicly available in your apostolate, and I want our listeners to know how they can get in touch with you, how they can access your resources, which are in various places. What's the best way someone can get a hold of you personally and receive help when it comes to the issues of forgiveness and personal tragedy?
Well, they can always go to my website, nightstorm.com. That's NYGHTSTORM.com. And contact
That's me. Nightstorm, yeah. Except with a Y, not an I.
Yes, sir. Nightstorm with a Y instead of an I. And they can go to the contact page and reach me through there. And we also have a service phone number on the website as well. And
what is that number?
It's called 770-695-2164.
Yeah, repeat it one more time.
770-695-2164.
So they go to your website, and what kind of resources will they find there?
Well, they will see a lot of blogs, of videos of encouragement, for one. And if they click on the Victor Sims Foundation page, they'll also see ways how they can access information dealing with traumatic issues like the death of a child or dealing with sexual assault or dealing with divorce, domestic violence, all the dark stuff that people don't like to talk about. They'll find some resources there and how we can help them.
And you've co-authored a book with Dr. Avita King, one called Nightstorm, A Story of How Kids Can Be Powerful. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Dr. Avita King, that's my spiritual mother. I love her so much.
She is. She is what I would call a force of nature.
I tell you this, it was an incredible experience when she reached out to me and we wrote the book together. And it's basically a superhero named Nightstorm, who just so happens to look like me with a cape. He helps some twin boys named Howard and Hank, and they're in their first grade, deal with their first day of school. And they are so terribly afraid because they're going to this new school. But they eventually help their classmates survive a tornado when it hits their school. And Howard and Hank were the names of the twin sons that were aborted in 1999. And this is my way of bringing life back to them and giving their life a purpose in helping others through the book.
And you also have your own radio show. Tell us about that.
Well, Nightstorm Radio, it's a radio show dedicated to helping people around the world dealing with life's darkest issues. And we do a lot of work with that show. And right now we're looking for a new home for the show. And but fans are still writing in and sending messages, and we're still helping them through social media. And, one day soon, Nightstorm Radio will be back on the air. We just got to find another home for it.
Well, I would encourage our listeners to go to the website and to look at some of the YouTube videos of YG speaking and presenting. Because I found just in the 5 hours I spent with him on the golf course that I was very uplifted and very strengthened and encouraged by being with you. And you were very kind in things you said to me, and I appreciate that. You put up a very funny video of our after the match. But it's important. You talk about how, we help each other. Sometimes we don't even realize we're helping others, and you only find out years later, if you find out at all, that this thing you said or did or this gesture you made, had a huge impact on somebody's life. and you were just being kind, or you were just being, you know, reacting to a need that you saw that was there. I noticed also, and I want to get specific on this, that you focus specifically on the difficulty that many parents are having in raising children. This is a very tough culture to raise children with values, with good taste, with good manners. I see, you know, my son is a high school senior, and I have a daughter who's went through high school and all the different traumas. How do you cut through the junk in the culture and help your children to embrace what, you know, what really is good for them?
Well, the thing, honestly, that has worked in my family with our seven children is that I have been very open and transparent with them about my life, the things that I did not have, the things I didn't have the love, I didn't have the support, I didn't have responsible male leadership in my life. And they all see the horrors of my childhood and my early life. Say, Dad, we don't want that to be us. I'm like, I don't want that to be you either. So let's do exactly opposite of what happened to me. And I take them down to the homeless shelters and have them preaching. I take them out evangelizing with me so they can see a different side, because fortunately my children haven't grown up like I did. They've been living in a bubble. But I say, this is what the real world is like to people who are suffering. And those people that everybody looks down on, that was me. That was your dad. How does that make you feel, that that was your dad? And they said, Dad, it makes us feel like crap, and it makes us want to be able to yep. do something about it. And you give them that real world approach, because a lot of kids didn't grow up like us, because we try to shield them. But you need to expose them to that ugly side so they can really learn to appreciate what they have and why that faith is important, why that strong foundation in God is so important. Because I didn't have it and my life was a nightmare, do you guys really want that life? No. Okay, so let's keep God in our life. Let's keep moving forward and having Christ as a foundation so you can make better choices than I did, so you don't have a personal hell like me. How about we do that?
And you know what? YG, you know, probably the most, the biggest question mark in your whole story is, how can someone who was raped at 11 at a Catholic camp, who was not Catholic, can now at the age of 42 be entering the Catholic Church? How does that happen?
Well, I tell you, and I was driving through a neighborhood one day, and I was pondering that question, because I was like, God was saying, I want you to be Catholic. And I'm like, I'm not going to be Catholic. And you know how you argue with God sometimes, and like you know better than he does. And I was driving through a neighborhood, and a little girl who was like 6 years old, she ran out into the street. She put her hands in front of my car, and she said, stop. And I was scared to death because I did not want to run her over. And I said, young lady, what are you doing? And she said, you're going to stop. Me and my sister have made the best batch of lemonade in the world, and you're going to buy some lemonade. And I'm like, what in the world is going on here? So I said, okay, young lady, I bought some lemonade. I bought the lemonade for 25 cents and drank it and left. But the lemonade was so good, I turned back around and I bought some more. And I said, young lady, I want to meet your parents, and I want to know who is responsible for this drive that you have. So I met her father. His name is Mike Trapeau, and I think you know him. And
yes.
He invited me into his home. We talked about faith. We talked about family. We talked about improving communities. And he said, and by the way, I'm Catholic, and I would like to invite you to some of our encounter meetings with some of my other friends. And I started to go to these encounter meetings. I started to meet his family, and my family started to meet their family, and the kids started to intertwine. And after 2 years of finally receiving love, support, commitment, everything I never got as a child, And I look at it as this way, Doc. What one wicked man did to me when I was 11 through Catholicism, seven very, very good men have replaced that hate and shown me nothing but love, kindness, and support, and invited me to join the church. And after 2 years of fighting it, I said, Father, I'm ready to come home. And I'm bringing my wife and family with me. And I can't say that's everybody's walk, but Doc, the love I got from Mike Trapo, Christian Costner, and the rest of that group, those strong men, inspired me to let Christ in my heart through the church, and I haven't regretted it ever since.
I have a feeling you're going to shake some things up. You're going to shake some things up on the other side of that. Entering into the church, I'm just thrilled that you're coming into the Catholic Church, and I'm thrilled at what you're bringing, the message you're bringing, who you are, the joy you're going to bring, and this message of forgiveness, which is, you know, we have in the church a whole sacramental system which is helps people, confession and so forth, helps people with this issue, but oftentimes I see that it's just not working for them, or the felt reality of this empowerment that you're talking about, of letting go of the darkness, is not happening. And I think they need lay-led encouragement from people like you and from me. And I'm just so glad that you have this apostolate and that you're bringing it into the Catholic Church. What church will you be received at?
I will be received at St. Brendan's in Cumming, Georgia.
And they
you have an invite, sir. Trust me. I cordially invite you to it.
Well, I hope so. And I'll make every effort to be there, and I certainly am starting to celebrate already along with you. And I take it that the Queen is on board just as much as you are?
Yes, sir. She's coming in the church as well, and she also had some words that she would like me to share with you, sir, if you don't mind. If I have one quick second. Okay, she said, after I got home from that golfing with you, and I told her how bad I suck at golf, but how much I've learned from you, she said, make sure you tell Dr. Bill how much I appreciate him. And I want to piggyback off of her sentiment. You, sir, have been such an inspiration to millions of people for decades. And I don't know how often you get told thank you. I had a chance to thank you on the golf course, but I want to thank you personally again on your show, because you have been a driving force for me. I have followed your work, and you have been one of the individuals that I've honestly respected and said, I've seen Dale Hudson go through his own drama, his own attacks, and he is still continues to stand firm on the mission that God has given him. And if Dr. Hudson can do it, then why can't YG Nightstorm or anybody else? So I appreciate you. Thank you for your sacrifice, for your patience, and your diligence on dealing with life's stuff to continue to help us. And special thanks to the wonderful assistant Claire for making this happen. I love you. I love you, sir. And I see you as, like, Alveda King, Dr. King is my spiritual mother. I see you as a spiritual father, a man that I can trust, that I can come to when life gets dark, when I can't tell it to the world. Thank you.
Well, I hope, YG, I continue to live up to those very kind and generous words. And I want to thank you for being on Church and Culture today, and I look forward to celebrating with you your reception into the Catholic Church. And you'll definitely be back on this show in the near future. So thank you very much, YG, for being on the show today.
My pleasure, sir. Much love from my queen to you, sir.
Thank you. And all of you are listening. I'm a little choked up right now, so I'm having a hard time to sign out, but I'm signing out only for a brief few minutes. We'll be back with another guest right after this break.
Old St. Mary's Catholic Church Detroit in Greektown invites you to join us Sunday, May 29th for the Feast of Corpus Christi, starting with a noon mass followed by an outdoor Eucharistic procession through the streets of downtown Detroit. Be a witness to our Catholic faith and have an opportunity to pray for the renewal of parishes in Detroit and our diocese. Visit our website, oldstmarydetroit.com, or call 313-961-8711 for additional information.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
Psalm 23 teaches us about God through the image of a shepherd, as it illustrates what a good shepherd must know and do for his flock. A good shepherd knows how to find food and water and leads his sheep to those locations. A good shepherd knows the landscape. He knows where to find shade and which are the safe paths. A good shepherd is able to protect his sheep from those who want to destroy them. Thus, sheep are tended by a good shepherd and have safety and security, nourishment and rest. In John's Gospel, Jesus proclaims himself to be the good shepherd. Psalm 23 teaches us what Jesus offers to us as our shepherd and what he wants to provide for us in our daily lives. Let us pray that we will let Jesus guide, nourish, and protect us as our shepherd, that we may rest with him in this life and the next. This message is brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan, CBSMICH.org.
The church exists to evangelize, and we, by our baptismal promises, are charged to carry out that work. On our next Putting on the Mind of Christ program, Peter Herbeck gives us some tools for our work.
One of the central things Pope Paul VI did was this. He said what he wanted us to do, to come to grips again with a deep understanding of what evangelization is. He said this, evangelizing is in fact the grace and vocation that's proper to the church. It's her deepest identity. She exists to evangelize. This is her raison d'etre. This is why the church exists. So he underlined that very clearly. So why is it the reason the church exists?
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Don't miss Peter Herbeck addressing our responsibilities and our part in the new evangelization. Listen to If Not You, Then Who on our next edition of Putting on the Mind of Christ. It's heard every Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on Ave Maria Radio and on the internet at AveMariaRadio.net.
Did you know that your kids can learn creative writing and science by playing Minecraft? Well, tune in to hear more exciting summer activities from HSLDA blogger Rochelle Wrights. That's today on Homeschool Heartbeat.
Rochelle, what are some of your favorite fun and educational summer activities?
Well, I love to travel, so whenever we can afford to take some time away, we might do a quick overnight trip. I love to go to historical sites and to museums, and quickly our children have joined me in that love. This summer, we're going to do astronomy. Even though that's an academic subject here in Michigan, it's kind of hard to do that during the school year because the sky is cloudy and it's too cold. When my kids were younger, we would have a zoo membership to a local zoo so that we could go and spend time observing animals.
Are there any helpful resources on this topic that you would recommend to our listeners?
Oh, sure. There's a great book called Chop Chop, The Kid's Guide to Cooking Real Food with Your Family. It's real colorful, has pictures of kids in the kitchen, and it's real practical, so it